your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 12th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. And this morning, I'm actually broadcasting live from my home in Harrisburg, South Dakota. My guest today is one of the coolest people I have ever met in the industry. She is an eighth grade teacher by day and organizational superhero by night. Armed with a sewing machine and design prowess that she learned from her mom, she is solving the organizational problems of knitting and the crochet community. She founded Erin Lane with her mom 4 years ago with just five products. She is now up to many more than that. She is unlike any business person that I know. She's charismatic. She's outspoken. She's more interested in what's real than what is politically correct. And she is someone that I find a breath of fresh air in the business community. I'm speaking of Lindsay Martin, who joins us from Murfreesboro, just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. Good morning, Lindsay, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. You did well with the name of my town. Well done.
Did I?
Yes, you did. Murfreesboro. It's the world's longest city.
Murfreesboro. Okay. Yeah. Well, I have to confess, I have not had the pleasure of getting to Murfreesboro yet.
Most people haven't. It used to be a really tiny town, and now it's huge because we have one of the largest state colleges in the country in Murfreesboro. Middle Tennessee State University is a huge college, and the city was planned for, like, I think it was 550,000 people, and that's just their enrollment. So we have traffic problems.
You have traffic problems. Well, it's got to be better than Nashville, which is pretty close, right?
Yeah, Nashville's only about 25 minutes away. That's pretty close.
That's pretty close. Yeah. So, you know, first of all, welcome to Fiber Hooligan. As I understand it, this is actually your first podcast, right?
It is my first podcast ever. I'm very excited.
We'll be gentle with you, I promise.
Oh, thanks.
Although I can't, you know, promise. It looks like we have Knitter's Brat in the chat room, and who knows what she's going to say. She's quite the heckler.
Who knows?
I know. She's been heckling you on Facebook this morning, hasn't she?
Yes, just a little bit. But that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm used to being heckled. I teach eighth grade. I'm used to it.
Well, before we get into that, let's start right there. You know, for folks that don't know your story, you did not start out in the industry. So why don't you tell us your history a little bit?
I guess I learned to knit about, geez, now I feel old. Maybe about 10 years ago, my aunt, who owned a knitting store in Grosse Pointe, Michigan for 23 years, we all went to Christmas at my grandma's house, and she shipped a whole bunch of yarn and needles there, and everybody learned to knit that year. And I learned to knit, and I was spoiled because my aunt had been knitting for 30-something years, and she taught me to knit on row and wool and Addy turbo needles. Well, I got little high-end. And when I got home and decided I would like to keep knitting because I really enjoyed it, I realized very quickly I could not afford to knit when I went to my local knitting store and wanted to buy row and wool and any turbo needles. And so my aunt sent me what she could, and which was a lot because she has lots and lots of things as she owned a store and is an avid knitter. And she sent me a whole bunch of stuff, and slowly but surely I left the set of needles here, or it got lost in a project there, or fell out of my bag here. And I quickly realized that I just couldn't afford to knit because I don't make a lot of money as a school teacher. Shocking, I know. And so I went to my mom and I said, Mom, I'm going to keep losing needles if I don't get something to organize them well with. Can you make me something? Because my mom's been sewing since I can remember. My grandmother sewed, my mom sewed. They made our Easter dresses when we were little. And so I went to her and we tinkered and tinkered weekend after weekend until we finally got something. And when we got a product that I liked, I put my needles in it, and I thought it was just the bee's knees. I had 9 sets of needles, and they were all in one place, 9 whole sets. I was just Miss Astor's pet pony. And I took it with me to the shop a couple weeks later when I went knitting, and I got my needles out. And, what is that? What is that? At the table, I was, it's a needle case. What does it do? It holds needles, hence the term needle case. Can I see it? Sure. So I passed it around the table. That's so inventive. That's such a cute idea. Oh, I love that. That fabric's so cute. And, oh, I wish I had one. And eventually it just kind of, from there, you know, can I get one? Can I get one? I want one. And one day one of our friends from the knitting shop was brave enough to, she went out and bought fabric of her own and handed it to my mom and said, would you make me one of those needle cases? It's just, I really need that. And my mom went, sure, no problem. So we went home. My mom made one, brought it back to her. And then the next day, when we brought it to her that Thursday, somebody said, wait, what? You make those? Oh, I want one. Can I get one? And we had like 12 orders. And my mom and I looked at each other like, wait a second, we can make money at this. And that's kind of how it started. We kind of fell into it. It wasn't like a plan. It was just Lindsay's poor and unorganized. And mom has a sewing machine. So we'll make it work.
Well, at some point, you know, she taught you to sew as well.
Yeah, that was a necessity to survive. Yes. I did a lot of seam ripping and a lot of ribbon ironing before I learned to sew. And it was kind of a running joke in the studio when my mom was like, I don't want to take that seam out. You do it. I would just shoot her a nasty glance. Like, I've done my time taking out your seams, lady. Because I took out seams for probably, geez, I ripped out seams for all the time when we were tinkering with it to figure something out. I did all the seam ripping when it didn't work. I did all the seam ripping for like a year before I got my first sewing machine. And so when she was like, you take this out, I would just look at her. So, oh, never mind. Yeah, never mind. I'm done with my seam time. Unless it's my mistake, you're taking out your own seams. So, but yeah, I did learn to sew, obviously. Obviously, I learned to sew out of necessity, really, because we needed to produce more so that we could make more money, so that we could more yarn.
Yeah, well, and you did this all in your copious spare time because, you know, you don't do anything else with your time.
No, I don't have anything else to do. I just sew and knit all day long. That's all I do. Yeah, totally. and really it did start out of my mom's in my spare time. My mom worked a full-time job. I taught. But I would just get up on Saturday morning, eat breakfast and lunch with my husband, kind of, you know, run our errands, clean the house, tinker around for a little while. And then I'd call mom and be like, hey, what are you up to? She's like, oh, I'm just watching a movie. Oh, hey, I'll come over. We'll play with that thing. Okay, I'll see you in a little while. And I'd drive to my mom's house. And we would sew for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, just having a good old time, eating chocolate, laughing, singing Jimmy Buffett. And whether or not it was successful is something else entirely, but we had a good time. And at the end of the day, I would drive home, and then I'd get up, go to church on Sunday morning. Hey, hon, do you have any plans? No, I was going to go gaming. I was like, okay, I'm going to go hang out with mom. And my husband would go gaming, and I would go hang out with my mom, and we'd tinker again. And then I went to school on Monday. She went to work on Monday. And it really was, I mean, something that we kind of started in our spare time, and then it grew into something that is a lot more demanding than just spare time. It's a full-time job. So,
well,
but we're
absolutely
really lucky. I mean, we're really excited.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about your, you know, because this is your other job, and you actually have a very demanding job. My mom is a teacher, and I have the utmost respect for teachers. Tell me about your world as a teacher.
I really love teaching. It's one of the most rewarding jobs anyone can have. There is not an amount of money that you can put on that aha moment with a kid. You know, I'll teach them about adjective and adverb prepositional phrases. They don't know they're learning it. We diagram sentences. Yes, yes, you can all hate me. I still make my kids diagram sentences. I love it. And so we will diagram sentences for months before we get to that part of our curriculum, before we get to the adjective, adverb, prepositional phrases. And I teach this horrible lesson. I mean, I design it to be terrible. And I'm like, okay, do it, let's go. And the kids all get all the examples wrong, and I get real frustrated when they're like, but you didn't teach this well. I'm like, diagram that sentence. And they diagram, and it's like all these little light bulbs go on all around my room. And I'm like, I always make a joke with my kids. I'm like, oh, it's too bright. Can I turn off the lights? Turn off the lights. It's too bright in here. And there's nothing better than that aha moment for that kid. That's why teachers are teachers. It's that aha moment, that rewarding moment when that kid finally it clicks, they get it. I love that. Unfortunately, a lot of teaching now is test data and crunching numbers, which I'm not good at because I'm an English person. And we crunch a lot of numbers, we do all that. And I love my job, I love my school, I love my principal. I'm really blessed to have a really supportive group of teachers that I work with and a really supportive administration. But I teach eighth grade grammar. I don't teach reading. I teach only commas and semicolons. I don't do anything like a normal person in my classroom. It took my principal about 3 years to realize that, and now he's just resigned himself to acceptance. Like, for instance, when my kids take a quiz, they sit in cooperative learning groups, and when they take a quiz, because you're all right on top of each other, make them spread out. And so, like, I'll review for the quiz, and then I say, who is paying attention? And they all raise their hands. I'm like, scatter, and it's a race. Who can get the furthest away from the most people? You get your quiz first. And so if you walk into my room on any given day, it looks like I have no brain. Because my kids are taking a quiz, I've got kids sitting on the counter, I've got a kid who's writing on the wall, I've got a kid laying on the floor, I've got a kid sitting on his desk, I've got a kid sitting on the floor writing in his chair. I look like I have no brain. And unfortunately, the state came to observe me this past year, which was great. I mean, I'm very honored that they want to come see my classroom. But somebody from the state came to observe me, and he walked in right as I said, scatter. And one of my football boys nearly knocked the poor man over, which was kind of embarrassing. He was like, whoa, who are you? And then just kept right on going because he's an eighth grader. He never asks, you know, he asks a question but doesn't wait for an answer. But I'm really lucky. I love what I do. It's very rewarding. It's demanding. Kids don't like to read anymore, so they hate to write as well. And we have a writing assessment in my grade level, so we have to get them ready to write an essay by February, which is interesting, especially since I go to Stitches West in February. So that's always an interesting conglomeration of stress at the beginning of the year. But it's a great thing. It's the test data. I have a hard time with that. I'll say that. I was never a good test taker when I was a kid. I took my ACT like 4 times, and the best I got was a 23. I'm not a good test taker. I overanalyze everything when it comes to tests, multiple choice. I'm bad at it. And I have a hard time with my kids. They get real upset because they've been taking these standardized tests since they were in third grade, and they've been told, oh, you're proficient, you're advanced, you're basic, you're below basic, you're great, you're bad, and they associate their intellect with a number. And I have a hard time with that. So I spend a lot of time in my classroom saying, like, it's just a number. You're not a number. It's just a number. It's just a test. It's just a test. And, yes, it's important. It counts in your report card, and it's important you want to do well because we want to look good as a school, you know, da-da-da, but it's just a test. It's just a test. And I actually had this year, which was really nice, I had a couple parents email me this year and say, thank you for telling my kids it's just a test and it's not how smart they're going to be or what they can accomplish. Because according to my, like, all of my testing previously, and I always tell my kids this, I should neither be able to run a classroom nor a business, and I do both. So it's just a test.
Well, I'm glad you look at it that way. I mean, one of the roughest things that can happen from an educational standpoint is that a kid can be beaten down. That's never the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my kids always think it's funny because I always tell them, like, I hate their textbook. My textbook is horrible. The standards have changed 3 times since we bought that textbook. It's terrible. And so at the beginning of the year, I make them bring your textbooks with them to class, and I have to hug them, like, love your textbook. Love it. Now go put it in your locker. I never want to see it again. And 1 year I was talking about how much I hated their textbook when my principal was in the room, and my kids got real nervous, and they started to, like, jitter and fidget at their desk. I'm like, what's wrong with you guys right now? They're like, Ms. Martin, Mr. Creasy is behind you. Yeah, and he doesn't even know you don't like your textbook. And my principal just starts laughing. He goes, yeah, I've known that for a while now. So the kids think it's funny, but, you know, like, I don't use a textbook. It's not useful. It's not written for them. It's not, I hate textbooks. I think they're a waste of time for language at least. And, you know, I hate testing, and the kids think that's great. Like, I hate my textbook and I hate the tests and blah, blah, blah. And the kids are like, Ms. Martin's so fun. Oh, yeah. Okay. Commas. Let's go. Sometimes that's not so fun, but yay, Ms. Martin's going to be fun. Sure. Okay.
Well, you talked a minute ago about your principal, and you've talked to me about your principal a lot of times. Would you share with our listeners just a little bit about your interaction and the support your principal's given you?
Yes, I am super lucky to work at a school where my administration is 100% supportive of me. They know that I have a business. They know that that business requires me to go to trade shows. I have never, ever gotten any kind of pushback or anything from my principals. Mr. Creasy is a very family-oriented man, and he's always said, if you have a family problem, you go take care of that family problem. You get a sub, we'll take care of your kids here at school. Don't worry about it. Your family comes first. Family comes first. Family comes first. He's always said that, no matter what the situation is. I've had friends with kids who have to have surgery. I've had friends who've had to have surgery. I've had friends whose parents have had to have surgery. Doesn't matter what's going on. If it's just like a sick baby, doesn't matter. Take care of your family. We'll handle it here at school. Don't worry about it. And it is, I mean, I'm really lucky at my school. It really is a family. When anything happens, if anybody's having a bad day or, you know, something tragic happens, we really do kind of like rally around that person. It's like a second family. You don't have to worry about this or that or the other. Somebody's going to be there. Somebody's going to ask you. Somebody's going to help. And my principal's been really understanding. I remember, though, my very first stitch is Sal. My mom and I had paid our booth fee and were really excited. We'd made all the stuff. And, you know, I guess it was about 3 or 4 weeks before the show, I got an email from our test coordinators from the school, and it said, you know, TCAP testing will be these 4 days, and two of them were the show. And I was like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, I'm freaking out. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to go. Mr. Creese is not going to let me leave. I'm not going to be able to go to the show. We've paid all this money. What are we going to do? We've made all this product. Oh, my gosh. I was so nervous. And so I walked up to him, and I said, Mr. Creese, you have a problem? He's like, I don't like that. You look nervous. I said, well, here's my problem. He goes, okay, what? I said, well, my mom and I have paid to go to a trade show. And he's like, oh, that's great. That's great. When is it? I said, it's during TCAP. He's like, oh. I said, so I wouldn't be here that Thursday and Friday. He's like, okay, so just go talk to Ms. Knox. And I got his counseling, and she'll find somebody to cover you. Good luck. And he walked away. Like, I didn't even go to his office. I just caught him in the hallway, and it was that nonchalant. I was, you know, because I was thinking, okay, I'm going to take unpaid leave, and it's going to go in my file, and I'm going to get in all this trouble. But he was just like, okay, see you later. Bye. And I remember a couple of years ago I had first period planning, which was horrible. And because I had first period planning, I had to watch the kids come in off the bus every morning. And so I was standing in the front hall waiting for the kids to get off the bus. And Mr. Creasy generally comes and greets the kids in the morning from there, too. So we were having conversations on a regular basis. And I remember it was my first stitches west, and my mom and I were really excited about it. And I told him that I was leaving, but with everything that goes on in a school every day, he doesn't remember that. And I came back the next Tuesday. I left on Wednesday, and I came back on Tuesday. And so I'm standing, I goes, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time, Martin. How you doing? Well, I'm doing well. I'm tired, but I'm okay. He goes, oh, that's right. You heard that thing. And he makes, like, a really rudimentary knitting motion. He basically just, like, moved his hands in circles. And I was like, yeah, I went to a show. And he goes, well, how'd you do? Did you do well? I said, yeah, you know, we did really well. We did, you know, 2/3 of my take-home pay for a year in 4 days in sales. And his mouth just dropped, and his eyes got real big. He's like, what? I said, yeah, you know, we do okay. And he looks at me, and he goes, have you ever thought about doing that full-time? And, like, as soon as it popped out of his mouth, he shook his head because he knew, obviously, that's like a here's your sign question. Who hasn't thought about it at that point? And I said, well, you know, health insurance, we've got really good health insurance. He goes, yes, we do have good health insurance, and you need health insurance, don't you? I was like, yeah, I do. I need health insurance. So we giggled about that. He's really supportive. Even this year I took when my mom died, my dad was having some medical issues, and I had to stay home and take care of him. And I called central office to put in for the Family Medical Leave Act. It's a federal law. You know, you can take it for pregnancy. You can take it to take care of an ailing parent, a child. And it's a federal law. And so I called and I said, I need the paperwork. And I talked to somebody at central office, and she said, well, I'm really sorry about your mom, but, you know, if you're just going to be home to take care of your dad because he's sad, you're not going to get approved for this. At which point, I just hung up the phone because I was probably going to yell at her and not in a professional manner. And so with that information, you know, I called and called and called. I could never get anybody to call me back. I was going to try to talk to somebody above her, and nobody would call me back. So I went in, and I had to submit my letter of resignation to my principal right before school started back. And he went, what is this? I said, it's exactly what it looks like. My letter of resignation. And he said, why? I said, because I can't leave my dad alone, and central office won't approve my leave. And he said, hang on a second. I went to his office and called this assistant superintendent, and he's like, I'm about to lose one of my best language teachers because you guys won't put her on leave, and she just lost her mom and her dad is ill. What are you doing? And she went, oh, no, we're just waiting for her paperwork. And Mr. Creason looks at me and goes, they're just waiting for your paperwork. So that is not what I was told. And he's like, here, you talk to her. So I got on the phone with the assistant superintendent, whom I had left probably 15 messages for previously and could not get her to call me back. And Mr. Creasy called. She answered. I got on the phone with her, and my leave was approved 5 minutes later, paperwork and all. Everything was done. So he's, I mean, I'm probably, he's probably the best principal that I've ever had. Even going through school when I was a child and now as a teacher, he's definitely the measure of a principal that I will use probably the rest of my life. When I have kids, if they're in school, if I keep teaching, he will be the measure of a principal for the rest of my life, because he really is about, he knows every single teacher individually. He knows who we are, our families, what we do, hobbies. He's really involved, and that really creates an environment where, like, you know, granted, there are times where I don't like going to work because I have to teach semicolons for, like, the ninth day in a row, and the children are antsy, and they're predicting snow, and they think they're going to get out of school, so they didn't do their homework. No, I don't want to go to school because it's going to be, like, a nightmare. But, you know, I know that I'm going to go and all my friends are going to be there and we're going to joke about this later when, you know, there was some funny thing in the hallway or whatever. And Mr. Creasy is really good about that. We're really, really lucky to have a principal that is that understanding. He's wonderful.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I know that, you know, besides your principal and your friends, you know, you have family that supports you too. The one that comes to mind, of course, is your husband, and you always refer to him both as devoted and nerdy. Can you tell us a little bit about your husband?
Yes, he's devoted and nerdy, very much so. Because I have to get up and go to school every morning at, like, I'm at school no later than 7 every morning, and I'm there until about 4, it's difficult for me to get to a post office. So I will package up all of my sales from my Etsy shop on, like, a Tuesday night and then leave them in a big crate and just tell my husband, you have to go to the post office today. When I'm walking out the door, okay, I'll go to the post office. And he runs errands for me constantly. I need you to go. I need you to go to Joann's and buy this. I need you to go to Michael's and buy that. I need you to go to Hancock's and get this thread. It looks like this. I'll leave him a list of things to do. And when I come home in the afternoon, like, everything's in my studio and he's done all my errands. He'll list stuff on Etsy. He'll post stuff on Facebook. He'll tweet things. He's a super mega nerd. He works at home all day, so I have an advantage there. He writes mostly, so he stays at home all day, so I can make him run errands and he doesn't mind. He's super understanding when I get stressed out about a show in school and I snap at him for no good reason. He's like, okay, honey, all right, go back to your sewing room now, and just kind of lets it roll off his back, which makes him a saint. But I think the most supportive thing that he does, I have not done a load of laundry or cooked dinner in 9 months. Yes. 9 months. He's done all my laundry and cooked all my meals for 9 months. I haven't done any of them because I've been so busy with school and everything. If dinner was up to me, it'd be like Taco Bell every night because you can drive through and it's cheap. So if he's cooked all of our meals, done all of our laundry. Now, I will say I do remind him to do laundry a lot because, like, I have a favorite shirt that I want to wear once a week, and he'll do laundry every 2 weeks. Like, you need to do a load of laundry right now. This shirt has to be in it. But that's because I want to wear that shirt every week. That has nothing to do with the fact that he forgets. So he's really supportive, and, you know, he knows, you know, my husband can speak knowledgeably about knitting. He knows the difference between a knit and a purl. He knows how to cast on. He knows how to bind off. He doesn't knit himself, but he has seen me do it enough. He helps me in the studio. He'll help me figure out a design problem. He was the one who designed the new 2-at-a-time sock bag, despite the fact that I had worked on it for 3.5 weeks and still couldn't figure it out. He walked in and did it in 10 minutes, which is slightly annoying, but also very nice that it's now developed, which is nice. But he's great. He is a super nerd. He's a gamer, and, like, not a video gamer, and not the stereotypical, everybody thinks, you know, like they don't shower and they're antisocial, and, you know, he's never had a girlfriend. You know, my husband was not that guy. He was really social as a kid, loved to play, you know, role-playing games, paper and pencil role-playing games with his brothers and his friends at home in California, and now he's got a really great group of gaming friends here in town, and they get together 2 or 3 times a week, and one night's board games, and then another night's miniatures gaming on a tabletop, and then they might just sit around and talk and drink beer and have a good time and talk about, you know, their latest conquests. I've won against so-and-so or such-and-such. And, you know, we're all super nerdy. You know, we love Star Wars and Serenity and all that kind of cheesy nerdiness. And it's really great because all the girls, like all the husbands will get together and want to, you know, play war and we're going to beat each other up and my guy's going to shoot your guy and I'm going to roll these dice. And all the girls are like, let's go and watch a movie and knit. So it's really convenient because all the guys want to go gaming, all the girls want to go knitting. So it's a really nice little community. There's actually a lot of crossover I found between like geekdom and knitting. There's a lot of geeky knitters in the world. I'm a fan. Makes me feel at home.
I've actually found that too. I was I had a show, and I can't remember which one, that crossed Comic-Con in the area, and people were just wildly upset that it was East.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was
last East, right?
Yes.
Yes, it bothered people a lot, and I, you know, who knew that there was going to be such a big crossover between that?
Yeah,
I think that there are a lot of, you know, you said Firefly fans. I see that all the time. I do too. That was a great show. It's so terrible that it's not on anymore, but we won't get into that because that's just sad. So now we've talked a little bit about your infrastructure and your support, let's talk about your product line. You started out with four products, and you and your mom put the first four products together. And now you've got 19, 20 products. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, well, we went to our very first Stitches South. We were, like, my mom was the worrier. She was always like, oh, my gosh, we can't do this. We can't get this done. We're never going to make it. Nobody's going to like us, like, all up to the show. And I was the one going, oh, my gosh, chill out. Everybody's going to love us. We're awesome. This fabric is great. Look how cute this is. It's going to be popular, blah, 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 right? And what was so funny is when we got to our very first Stitches, like, we got our first load in to our first booth, and it was a, you know, single booth, and we were on the corner, and we were so excited, and you know, we got the Viper guys loaded us into our booth, and as soon as I walked onto the floor, like, my stomach sank, and I started turning into the worrier, but I couldn't say anything to my mom because I was like, if I worry, then mom's going to freak out, so I have to be super strong. And then we got, like, but in my head, I'm going, oh, my gosh, nobody's here to buy a bag. Everybody's going to buy yarn. What was I thinking? Oh, my gosh, it's such a disaster. We are not going to make any money. Oh, my gosh, what were we doing? What were we thinking? This is ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. And that's what I'm going on in my head, right? And just like, no, Mom, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. And we're setting up the booth. And, oh, we're going to be awesome. It's going to be so fun. And but inside, I'm, like, panicked. But we went to our very first show with our what we call the Knit Pack Original, which we no longer make because it's too small for any knitter I've ever met, a double point case, an ultimate, a useful, and a bucket. That's where we went. We had those five products when we went to our very first show. That was it. And, well, we had drawstring bags, but we did not know how popular the drawstring bags were going to be. We took, like, 75 total. That didn't last very long at all. We went to our very first show with, like, five or six products, and, you know, so-and-so needs something for interchangeable needles, and what about something for two sets of interchangeable needles, and what about straight needles, and, well, I want a bigger bag, and blah, blah, blah. So it just kind of evolved, and now we have, like, let's see, one, two, three, we have four or five different totes of varying sizes and, like, 7 to 9 knit packs that hold, you know, everything from notions to a little bit of everything. So it's been in the works for a long time. I mean, obviously it's been a process, but it's been a good process. And, you know, most of my ideas come from people at shows. That's one of the best things about shows is that people are like, I wish my bag would do this. I'm like, I've got a note for that in my phone. I'm going to type that in really quick. So, you know, like our notions came from that. And actually the double duty came out of a request from two ladies, met us at our very first Stitches. They were sisters from Atlanta, and they walked into our booth and said, we want to order this, and they did, and they left. They walked out of the booth, and they walked right back in, and then the other sister ordered something. It was really cute, and it's kind of stuck in our minds, and when we did our Indiegogo campaign to fund our embroidery machine, they were some of our biggest supporters, and, you know, like, they were tweeting about it and Facebooking about it and posting on Ravelry and doing all kinds of stuff to help us out. And they, you know, they met in the middle of that, and they were like, I have two sets of interchangeable needles. Can you do something for two sets of interchangeable needles? And my mom and I were like, that doesn't seem so hard. And we developed the double duty based on, you know, that just those two people said they wanted one. And we were like, yeah, we could probably do that. And so we named it the double duty for those sisters. You know, so And we're still really good friends with them, and they actually moderate my Erin Lane board for me, and they're awesome. And every time I go to Speak of South, I, you know, spend a whole bunch of time with them because they're amazing. And but, I mean, that's where a lot of it comes from. It's just, you know, user request.
Well, besides being hyper-responsive to your customers, listening to what they want, which is smart business, the other thing that I see about your presence on the floor is that you're extremely well-branded, very professional-looking. There's obviously a lot of work that you've put into the work on your logos and the work on your booth and just your visual sense. Is that you?
Yeah. My family has never been the kind of people that look at something and go, I need to buy that. I can't tell you the number of times, like, my mom and I would be in a furniture store and see something, or like a drapery store. My mom's like, oh, I can make that. Take a picture of that with your phone. I can make that. And she'd look at it for a minute, write a couple notes down, and we'd leave, and we'd go home and we'd make it. We were never, ever a family that we purchased things. My mother never, like, that was one of the reasons my mom started sewing, was when she got her first house, she couldn't afford curtains or drapes. And so my dad entered a contest at work where he had to sell a certain amount of stuff, and he could win a brand new white sewing machine. And my mom was like, I need that sewing machine, John. I need it. And so my dad was like, okay. And my dad sold it, and my dad won. And that was my mom's sewing machine for 32 years. She had a sewing machine for 32 years. And she started sewing draperies. She did curtains and drapes. And then when I was little, she sewed all of my bedding. Like, I never had store-bought bedding. My mom always made my bedding. I always had custom-made bedding, custom-made, you know, Easter dresses for church and all that kind of stuff. And so it just kind of became a, I can do that situation. And since it was just myself and my mom and our tax return that was funding Erin Lane at the beginning, I got like a big tax return and I bought my first sewing machine. And then my mom got her tax return and she bought supplies. And that's kind of how it started. You know, we didn't really have a plan and we certainly didn't have a lot of startup capital, but we just kind of made it happen. And I was like, well, you know, I've got paper crafting supplies from when I used to make greeting cards for, you know, all my family members and birthday cards for my family members. And I've got paper crafting supplies. We can make signs this way. And I've got a paper cutter and I can take this to school and get it laminated because it's just a couple signs. And, you know, it just kind of became a, well, okay, we need to make signs. Okay, well, we need a logo. And, you know, that, thank God that my teaching county has a lot of technology in it, and I have access to, like, Macromedia Fireworks, so, and I can install it on my home computer because I have to be able to manage my website at home. So, like, I installed that on my home computer, and now I have a photo editing software, and I can make my own logo. And it just kind of, you know, my sister is an artist in Atlanta. She has an art degree, and, you know, my mom was always very artistic. My dad's very creative. I'm very creative. We just come from a very long line of creative people. My grandfather was a great artist, and my aunt and everybody knits, and, you know, we're just creative people. And so it just kind of, you know, what's going to look best? How are we going to best present this? And my dad was a salesman my whole life, sold medical systems for 40-something years. And so it was just a matter of, okay, what is this going to look like professionally? We did a lot of research, you know, what do we need this to look like? How are we going to present this? What is it going to need to stand up? What do we need? Grid wall, hooks, you know, all that kind of thing. And, it was a lot of research. It was a lot of time on the internet. But, you know, we did it all. I mean, it was really just me and my mom. And, you know, we made the signs and we came up with ways to label things and we came up with a logo and all that kind of thing. It was really just, yeah, I can do that. And if I can't, I'm going to figure it out. And that was always how my mom and I viewed anything, like, oh, I can do that. And then if it was a total disaster, okay, well, we learned and we're going to try something different. And that's really how it is. I mean, There have been lots of incarnations, of signs. It used to be that I made a new set of signs for every show I went to, not because the price has changed, but because, you know, this, we added a product and I can't find that file on the computer anymore, which I'm notorious for. Or, you know, oh, they don't have that paper anymore at the Hobby Lobby and I have to go get new paper, so I have to have new signs. Crap. And, I made new signs for the first 2 years. I made a new set of signs for every show. I have billions of signs that say, like, Knit Pack Interchangeable and Knit Pack Ultimate and all that kind of stuff. until one day, like, I just stumbled on the idea, and now it works really well, and it looks really good, and I think a lot of it is, you know, just trial and error. You know, this worked really well, this didn't, so we'll change that, and we'll keep doing this. And it's just, I guess it's just the willingness to be flexible. Like, okay, this is not working. We need to change the strategy. Let's try X. And I'll try X for a little while. And if that works, great. And if it doesn't, lesson learned. But, yeah, my mom and I, we made all the signs. We made the logos. We obviously made all the product. You know, used my mom's, my mom had a Tahoe. And we used, you know, the Tahoe to get our stuff to our very first stitches. And we just, you know, just did it. Well, we're going to do this now. And we just did.
Well, I've been impressed with just how proactive you are. I mean, from an outside perspective, it doesn't look to me like you're not doing this thing 60, 70 hours a week, because you're prolific out there in social media, on Ravelry. Everything you do just looks so pro. And one of the examples that I want to give to our listeners that they may not know is that for every show that we do, every Stitches show on Ravelry, there's a group for Stitches. And in that group, there is a thread called the Vendor and Sponsor Preview. And there's an ongoing contest per show, which is show us what you can do, promote yourselves, let our customers know what you're bringing. And you sort of ran away with that in a way that I eventually had to retire your jersey.
Yeah. I come from a long line of people who are extremely competitive. We're a competitive family. Like my students always say that I'm really loud, and I know I have a loud voice. I'm just someone who, as that's my volume. I think part of it comes from the fact that I have like 47 cousins, and when everybody shows up to grandma's house for dinner, you know, for Christmas dinner, if I'm there's only I only have one cousin that's younger than me, and if you want to be heard, like you've got to be loud if you want some turkey, and like if you want, you know, Aunt Jo's rigatoni, you're going to have to, like, get your hand up there. You gotta get in somebody's face. And, you know, I hate to say it, but teaching eighth grade, I'm real good at getting somebody's attention for a while. Teaching teaches you a lot of things about yourself that you never would have discovered otherwise. And, you know, my mom and I remember the first one that we really took seriously. I know you did it for our first, our first East was when I think the first contest for the free booth was. And I remember Decadent Fibers won, and I was so impressed with what they did. And you had said, I think in an email to, you know, look at a previous winner and see what they did and then kind of try to model it after that. And then I remember my mom and I had decided to take the plunge and go to Stitches West, which is of course the furthest away from us. But as an added bonus, my husband's from California, so I get to see my mother-in-law. So that's nice. But my mom and I decided we were going to take the plunge, which means we had to ship all of our stuff out there, and we had to rip Gridwall, and, you know, we had to get all this stuff together, and we had to be done earlier than we would have ever had to be done before, and then the plane tickets and, like, all this stuff. And my mom, when we got that email, my mom, I remember I came home from school that day, and my mom had the email printed out, and she just stuck it in my face. She goes, we have to win this, because that's the only way we're going to be able to afford to go to Stitches West. We have to win. I said, okay, we're going to win. And so I went on the Stitches East board, and I looked at what Decadent Fibers had done, and they had done the 12 days to Stitches East. And so every day they had told you about a different product that they had and put a picture with it. So I knew that I had to have something every day, and I knew that I had to have a picture every day. And so I just started posting every day, whether it was what we did in the studio, whether it was something that had happened that had gone wrong, something that had gone right, fabric that had come in, whether my mom and I were stressed about getting to the show, whatever it was, I just started posting every single day. And I did it every day at 10 o'clock because mom and I would stop sewing at 10 o'clock at night, and I would post something. I'd take about 30 minutes and post something, and then I'd go to bed and get up and do it all again the next day. And so I posted every day. And then it kind of became funny because, like, I can't afford a dog, time-wise or financially, and so I have pet yarn that my husband bought me. It's one of my favorite skeins of yarn. I don't think I'll ever make him into socks because I love him too much now, and he has his own little persona, Hank. And Hank is, you know, like, very aware of the injustices that plastic puts on yarn and needles. And so I kind of started posting that Hank didn't like being put in plastic and gave Hank a little bit of a personality and started letting Hank post on Ravelry for us. And before I knew it, like, all of a sudden it was a storage revolution, and it was going to be, you know, treat, you know, handle yarn and needles kindly. It's Operation Hank. Probably kind of spurned by the whole Occupy whatever was going on around that same time. And somebody actually said, like, uh-oh, is there going to be an Occupy Stitches? And I was like, no, because that seems kind of negative, and I don't want this to be negative. So, you know, on the spur of the moment, we had to come up with, what could we do that's kind of like an Occupy thing, but it's positive and fun and everybody's going to want to be a part of. And so it just kind of took off, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, my gosh, we need buttons. Okay, this is like a whole thing. We need to make this happen. And it became like, it just kind of ran away with itself. I didn't plan that one at all. It just kind of happened. I just kind of fell into, okay, this is how it's going to progress. And it was really great. And I remember I was running late. We were running late to get set up for the preview. And my dad was like, hey, kiddo, run out to the car and get such and such. So I grabbed the keys and I'm tearing down the aisle, and I'm wearing like some ratty T-shirt that says Stewart's Creek Middle School and, you know, jeans. I don't have anything on me that says that I'm with Erin Lane Bags. And somebody, some vendor stops and goes, oh my gosh, you're Hank's mom. And like, it caught me so off guard. I was like, yes. Is Hank here? Yes. Where are you? And then like, I drew a complete blank on where my booth was. I was like, over there. Like, I was just taken so off. Like, I didn't expect anybody to really have paid attention. Then, you know, like, I just thought it was, you know, another one of those weird, I'm a weird language arts teacher that doesn't do anything like a normal person. You know, like, I thought people were reading it, but I didn't think anybody would have recognized me. And then the preview night started, and like, everybody who came to the booth was like, can we get a picture with Hank? I need a picture with Hank. And it became this huge thing. And my dad was like, oh my gosh, that yarn is famous. I'm like, I know. And it was really great. So, I mean, that's where it started. And then, you know, we won that booth. We were thrilled that we won that booth because, of course, that helps us afford going to West because, that's our most expensive show. And then for South, I remember I was just sitting at my sewing machine churning out drawstrings, which is just like mindless sewing. And I was thinking about, I think I was thinking about my iPhone, and then I started thinking about those Mac ads, you know, oh, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. And it was like, oh my gosh, lightning. We'll do, I'm an Erin Lane Bag and I'm the other guy. And my mom and I, like, we didn't write a script or anything. Because we were short on getting to South and we needed something to post. So I went to Target and bought one of those flip cameras for like $90 on my way home from school, went home, changed clothes, drove to my mom's house, and my dad filmed everything. We did it in one afternoon. We just filmed all those little, like, I'm a Mac, or I'm an Erin Lane and I'm the other guy ads in one afternoon. And, we didn't expect to win or anything. We were just like, oh, it's fun. You know, we're out there. Something different. And then we won that one. And it just became something that, I mean, I guess the main thing that Stitches West taught me was that, you know, most people go to Stitches to buy yarn. They don't go to buy bags. They don't think about that. And, you know, that's not your main focus. I mean, when I go to a Stitches, I think about yarn, and I'm the bag vendor. So maybe that's because I make the bags. I don't know. And so it really made me realize that, you know, if I want those dollars that are earmarked for yarn, like, I've got to make you realize that you need better needle storage, or you need a better bag for your yarn. You need that. And I have to fight for those dollars because Stitches is about yarn. It's about needles. It's about classes. And so that's what Stitches West taught me. And since then, it's just kind of become something that I now is just kind of part of my production run. Like, not only am I having to make all of these bags, like, I have to post every night. I have to stay on top of Ravelry. I have to be active on those boards. And the latest one, I know my brain's not right. Like, I became very aware of the fact that my brain does not function like normal people's brains when I decided to write a Dr. Seuss poem for every product that I had. Once again, teaching came into play. My students had to, I have a Dr. Seuss assignment for my kids that helps them review their parts of speech. And they were like, well, why don't you have to write one? We have to write one. I was like, fine, I'll write one. And then I was like, well, I have to write one that they can't steal. So what can I write about that they can't rip off? And I was like, oh, I'll just write about a product. I'll just write about knitting, because that's my go-to thing, because none of my kids knit, so I know they can't rip me off. They can't use my example. And so I was like, I'll write about knitting. And all of a sudden, like, I was writing about knitting, and then all of a sudden it was about the knit pack. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I went home and I told my mom about it. She's like, that's such a great idea. And it took me a full year to write all of those Dr. Seuss poems. It took me 12 months to write all of them. But it has been, that one I think is probably one of the most fun because I got to run a contest. You know, like you got to come by the booth and you got to enter to win and, you know, you got to kind of have something fun to kind of get you ready to go to Stitches and all that stuff. And people have been really excited about that one. I've gotten a lot of emails from some of my customers at Midwest. They're like, are you going to do the Dr. Seuss thing again? Are you going to do the Dr. Seuss thing again? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Calm down. So, you know, I come from a long line of people who want to win. I'm super competitive. Like, I'm really competitive. And my mom was like, we need to cut our booth costs. We need to cut our booth costs. Okay, we'll figure it out. And the first one kind of happened, and then now I have, like, plans, and I'm constantly thinking, okay, what could I do next time? What could I do next time? And, you know, I talk about it all the time. My husband, I'm sure he gets irritated because I'm always like, okay, what if I did this? And he always plays devil's advocate. That won't work. Try this. So I'm really lucky. And my dad's really good about it, too. My dad will help me think of marketing ideas and stuff like that. But, yeah, it was a the first one, I mean, I was thrilled. I was thrilled to win because it's the most expensive show for us. And but then it just became a situation where I realized if I want those dollars at Stitches, you know, I'm not the yarn guy. I'm not the yarn guy. And there's a lot of bag vendors. There's great bags out there. I have to fight for those dollars. And that's kind of where it came from. I mean, I'm going to stay on those boards no matter what because I've seen the potential of that. I mean, I've seen that granted, at 10:30 at night, I don't really want to post something on Ravelry, and I don't want to be creative, and I don't want to be quippy and funny. I want to go to bed. But I've seen the potential of when I do it and when I don't. Like, I've seen, you know, there's a difference. It really pays off, and I love that you guys have those boards on Ravelry because that's also how I know where to go to buy things when I'm there.
Well, and I agree. And, you know, I put the contest out there because I wanted to give an incentive for people to do it. And, you know, with you, you're a special case. You ran the table four times, and I was getting concerned that nobody else wanted to play because they didn't. So what I did, and, you know, full disclosure, folks, I retired Lindsay's jersey. She still posts, but she can't win. And in consideration for that, she got free boost for the rest of the year. But she doesn't have to compete against other people who are, I think, we're getting tired of losing to you. But beyond that, I like what you're saying here, which is that, you know, beyond the winning of the booth, which reduces your costs, you could see a marketing advantage and a sales advantage on the floor for it. And I think that was what I was trying to get people to get to. And I'm glad that you got there first.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And, you know, like, there are a lot of other really great bag companies out there that make great things that either I don't make or I don't want to make. And, you know, like, I know Yarn Pop makes a really great iPad case. You know, she did a great job. She's going to rock that. I'm going to let her. And there's a lot of bag vendors out there. But, you know, if I was selling yarn by the same token, you know, if I'm selling Madeline Tosh, so are five other people. And I feel like, you know, I thought about it that way because I went to a really small show in Dallas kind of last minute. I was on the waiting list and they called me. It was the weekend before Stitches South. I went to DFW in Dallas and it was a great show. And what they had done was that they had kind of, you know, I was the only bag vendor there that year. I was the only bag vendor, which was wonderful. But like I was next to Western Sky Knits. And those ladies are just wonderful. They were the ones who told me about the show. And I was like, everybody here is selling yarn and fiber. How is it? Like, everybody's in direct competition with you. Because everybody, it's a very indie show. It's all indie dyers, you know, that kind of thing. And she's like, oh, no, we do great here. We do great. Everybody loves us here. And sure enough, I mean, they were slammed the whole time. And she goes, you know, look, we all do a little bit different thing. And everybody kind of knows that we're a little different, and that's why it works. And it was an eye-opening thing because, you know, if I have such and such and you have such and such and we have the same thing, we're in direct competition. But, you know, if you get out there that mine's a little bit different, you know, like even though my base is the same as yours, if I'm an indie dyer, you know, like my color's a little different or I do self-striping or I do this. And it, you know, it just showed me that I guess that was the really like eye-opening thing. Even though, like, especially like if you were a yarn vendor, even though you're in direct competition with somebody else, I mean, Ravelry is free. that's my biggest thing. I mean, I'm on a really, really tight budget when it comes to getting to a show, and Ravelry is free. I don't have to pay for those dollars. It's my time. Now, granted, if I'm tired and I want to go to bed, I have to make myself get out my laptop. I have to make myself post something. I have to come up with a picture, which, you know, sometimes I'm just like, oh, I just don't have it in me. But, you know, I pull out my laptop and I do it because it's free. It's free advertising. And I've never paid for any advertising. I've done Facebook. I've done Twitter. I've done Ravelry. I've never paid for any advertising. And I've done very well just because social media is so huge. And I feel like if you use social media well and you're willing to put in the time, and that's really all it is the time, then, you know, you're going to reap a benefit from that. I mean, you get out what you put in. If you put time in, you're going to get money out. And so that's kind of what I remind myself when it's 11:30 at night and I just want to go to bed and I've got to do all these things for school in the morning. I'm like, if I just post one thing, if I just post it, then that's one more thing that somebody knows about that's out there. You know, there's that one person who needs a double point, you know, double point case. There's that one person who needs a crochet hook case and they don't know that I have it. I have to post it because they may not know. And like, so, I mean, I use Ravelry extensively for that. And also, I mean, I've found all kinds of like I found Knitting Rose. I didn't know about Knitting Rose until Stitches South. And they had been posting on Stitches South board, and I ended up buying a couple of skeins of yarn from them. It's lovely yarn, but I probably wouldn't have found them in the show if I hadn't known to, like, go look for them. And so that's kind of nice from a vendor point of view because I don't often get away from my booth to go, like, look around. And so when other vendors post, hey, this is what I have, and it's really cool, like, I know exactly where to go. If I have 5 minutes, I can go, I can get what I want, I can come straight back and not have to be away from my booth for a long time, which is nice.
Well, and I've seen the way that you work in your booth. You know, besides being proactive on social media, besides doing a good job with your branding, besides doing a great job with your product, you're also a very good salesperson. I've sat out in the aisle and watched you interact with people. I mean, you close. You talk and you engage.
I grew up in a household with a salesman. There was probably more than one occasion where I saw my dad sell my mom on an idea, whether it be, you know, getting a new refrigerator or going to a movie instead of cleaning the house. My dad sold multi-million dollar medical systems for 40 plus years. Everything from cancer treatment to kidney stone treatment. He sold just about everything, storage, all that. And, you know, if you're trying to get a hospital to spend $6 million and convert all of their files from this format to that format, I mean, you got to close. You got to be a closer. And we always joked in my house that my dad could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman in white gloves in July. And since we live in the South, a popsicle lasts approximately 3 seconds in July. And so we always joked about that. But my dad, I mean, my dad was always that way. Still is. Very charismatic. He would talk to a brick wall. I mean, if you stand in line behind my dad at the grocery store, he's going to have a conversation with you. That's just how he is. I always joke with my dad. I remember the other day I was talking about that. I said, when you were a child, your report card said John has trouble being quiet in class or John is excessively talkative. And he's like, how did you know that? It's a teacher thing. He was on the road a lot, but when he was home, you know, my dad's a great salesman, always, you know, got us a good deal, got me a good deal, my first car, and, like, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when you grow up with that, that's, you know, it's just part of your vernacular. It's how I grew up. I knew that, you know, this is a good way to make a sale. This is a way to, you know, and I honestly feel like people, you know, nobody walks into Stitches and goes, I hope nobody tries to sell me something today. That doesn't happen. Everybody comes to Stitches with a budget. Everybody comes to Stitches with, like, a plan. They want to see what's out there, what's new, what's hot, you know, and that's one of the best ways that I've, you know, been able to expand my brand was, you know, people from all over come to Stitches and those events and look forward to it. And so, I mean, if you're going to be there, you might as well, you got to capitalize on it. You know, you got to be engaging and be fun. If there's anything that I've learned, it's that different is better. You know, like, there's a million products out there, just like there's a million indie dyers. But I like this person because of this. And generally speaking, the way, I mean, at least for me, this person's personality is more fun, or this person has a better sense of humor. You know, and I feel like if you're just really honest with people and if you're just yourself, people can see that you're being genuine, and people are way more likely to trust somebody they feel is going to back them up if something happens. And, you know, because I make a handmade product, I mean, seams may come out. You know, sometimes I miss a seam a little bit or a snap may break and something like that. And I don't want somebody to be like, well, I've paid all this money for this product and now it's useless. You know, it's me and a sewing machine, so mail it to me. I'll fix it. Like, it's my fault. I'll fix it. No big deal. And I just feel like, you know, if you're just really honest with people up front about what they can expect from you, then they're way more likely to trust you. And, you know, like, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. I'm willing to admit that I made a mistake. That happens. No problem. I'll fix it. And, you know, I just feel like people, and I will say, I mean, I'm a handmade product, and there are a lot of people who don't understand the amount of time or effort or complications that goes into creating a bag with five pockets on the outside. Like, how do you get the bottom right, and where do you put the pocket, and is it straight? I mean, there's a lot that goes into putting, like, a barrel together. There's a lot of very nitpicky placement and sewing and ironing involved to make that bag work. And, you know, like, when I show my friends at school, they're like, oh, this is so cute. How much is this? I'm like, it's $85. And they're like, why? I'm like, you try to make one. But, like, I go to a knitting show, and everybody's like, oh, really? Oh, I know. That's beautiful. I sew, and that I couldn't do that. I'll take it. You know, because knitters, since they spend time making things with their hands, really appreciate someone who's taken the time to make something of quality with their hands. And I've seen that over and over again. I mean, like, I remember when I bought a new sewing machine. When my mom and I upgraded our sewing machines, I bought it's a high-speed machine. It has one stitch. It's a straight stitch because that's all I use, but it does 1,500 stitches a minute. It is fast. It'll sew through leather. It'll sew through your finger. It'll sew through anything. And I love it. It's my favorite machine. And I remember I was so excited, and I went to school. Somebody asked me what I did this weekend, and I was like, oh, my mom and I bought a new sewing machine. I was like, we got a really good deal on it. They're like, oh, what'd you pay, like $50? And I was like, no, like, not even close. And when I told them, they were like, why would you spend that on a sewing machine? I'm like, why would you spend $200 on a pair of Air Jordan shoes? You know, it's just like, I guess it's perspective. But, you know, when I say something like that to someone who sews, they're like, oh, my gosh, I love that machine. Oh, that's a great deal. Or if I say something to, you know, like, oh, I got this great pair of Addies on sale at such and such. Everybody's like, oh, what a good deal. You know, I tell somebody I pay $20 for a pair of knitting needles at school. They're like, why? I'm like, because they're good. So it's, I mean, I guess it's all perspective. But, I mean, I really enjoy the shows because everybody there is just, you know, especially the South. I guess I have, like, a very special place in my heart for Stitches South. My sister lives in Atlanta. So I get to see my sister when I go to Stitches South. And that was our very first Stitches ever. So it's, like, a very special place in my heart for Stitches South. But, like, all the people at Stitches South are just so fun. I mean, everybody, I've never been to a show where someone's been rude to me. Like, I've never had a rude customer or somebody who's angry or snippy or mean. Everybody's just like, look, there's all this yarn and people who like to knit. I'm just in my happy place. And everybody's having a really good time. And, it you know, that kind of environment is contagious. When everybody's having a good time and everybody has similar interests, you know, like, you kind of feed off of that. And that energy of, you know, like, we're all having a good time, or we're learning something new, or I got this great deal, or look what I found, or I heard about this in a class, or, you know, anything like that. It just, you know, everybody's so excited and wants to share information. And, you know, you can stop a total random stranger who's in the middle of a conversation walking down the aisle and be like, oh, my gosh, what pattern is that? And they'll tell you immediately. It doesn't even bother them. And that kind of energy, you know, it's hard for me to not be, like, really excited about that because, you know, I walk into a classroom every day where the kids are like, she's going to make us write an essay. And I'm, like, trying to be excited about it to get the kids excited about it. So when I get to go somewhere where everybody's excited about what we're doing, it's like, yes, everybody's excited, and we're going to be great, and this is going to be fun. And, like, it's just a really – it's exhilarating. I mean, and plus you just get to meet a bunch of, you know, really great people. I've met some of my favorite people at Stitches, like – Pam from Halos, or Babs from Miss Babs, or Deanna from, you know, Deanna's been a star. Like, I just have all these great friends that I get to see all the time, and it's always surrounded by, like, everybody being really excited about the newest yarn that just came out. I mean, it's like euphoria.
Well, and I've watched you and your friends shop out of each other's booths. I'm always watching you. Let's talk about South for a minute. That's the last time you and I saw each other. South, mm-hmm. I agree, is one of those friendly, friendly shows. I mean, it's a small show, yeah. but it's still a very friendly show. And I think I was sitting in your, or just outside your booth talking to you, and I think Pam came over from Halos of Hope. She came over and bought like three things while I was standing there talking to you. I mean, it's nice to see that those things are happening and that, you know, you're supporting each other and buying from each other.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel kind of guilty because I do all four stitches every year. So I have access to things that my friends only dream they could have access to. You know, like I can go get, you know, when I go to DFW, I can buy Madeline Tosh from the store. When I go to Stitches West, I can buy Western Sky Knits. You know, at South and, you know, at all the shows, I can get Dragonfly or Neighborhood Yarn Company or Cephalopod. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, you went to Cephalopod? I'm like, yeah. You know, like, it's not a big deal to me because I see them all the time now. But I remember a time where I was like, oh, my gosh, Cephalopod, you know, because I didn't do it. But I almost feel kind of guilty because I buy so much yarn at shows that I don't buy a lot of yarn at my local knitting store anymore. And so I have to, like, consciously make an effort. No, I'm going to buy this project at Bliss. Like, oh, I need that. I'll go to Bliss. Because I have a lot of Miss Babs, and I'm really lucky. My local yarn store carries Miss Babs, so I'm kind of spoiled because I can get it like from Miss Babs at a show, or I can get it in town when I'm at knitting. So I'm a little spoiled there because I love Miss Babs yarn. She's one of my favorites. But you know, I'm a little spoiled because, you know, like I remember Deanna had this really cute beaded knitted necklace that I really loved, and she was like, oh yeah, you can make this. She, you know, stopped and showed me how to do it right after the show. And you know, I have that kind of thing. Or when I have a question about a show that I'm not sure I want to do, like I'll email Barry Klein from Trendsetter, and he's kind of like my show dad. He's best friends with my Aunt Jan, and he's known, like, he comes to Thanksgiving dinner, and like, he's known my Aunt Jan for years. And you know, so I have this kind of family at Stitches where, you know, like, oh, I need sock yarn. You know, I'm just going to run over to Miss Babs real quick. Or, oh, I need, you know, worsted. I'm going to go to Neighborhood. Or, oh, I need this. I'll run to Dragonfly. You know, like, and I'm really lucky because, you know, like, all of those things are typically things that most people have to order online. And I can go, oh, no, I'll take this one, you know, because I'm there. So I really like that. I think that's one of my favorite things is getting, you know, not only do I get to, you know, like, there's my staples. Like, I always buy Miss Babs sock yarn. It's a problem. I have a lot of it. Or like Neighborhood. I buy a lot of Neighborhood sock yarn too. But like I also get to find, you know, somebody new that I wouldn't have necessarily found. Like Neighborhood, I was across the aisle from her at a show last year, and I wouldn't have found her. And we, you know, struck up a conversation and had a great time at that show, and, you know, things like that. So I get to try a lot of new things that I wouldn't necessarily have access to if it wasn't for going to Stitches. Like I tried, Miss Babs had a new base for her sock yarn and has a Tencel in it. It's really sturdy. And so I'm knitting with that. And, you know, like I wouldn't have necessarily tried that on, like if I'd bought it online because I hadn't touched it. But when I touched it and felt it, I was like, ooh, this is really nice. So that's definitely an advantage of being able to go to all the Stitches because, you know, everybody has something new when they go to the shows and you always get to kind of fondle everything, which is really nice. Like I try to get there early a couple of days and kind of wander before the hordes descend.
So
I do.
You've been doing, yeah, I know you do. So you've been doing Stitches for about 3 years now.
Yeah.
There was Christy from who's Knitter's Brat was just in the chat room, and she said that she remembers your first Stitches East and how you lost your signs.
Yes.
There's the ups and the downs. And of course, doing shows is extremely stressful because you have a lot of money out. It's always speculation. Is it going to work or isn't it? You know, what have you learned over time? What do you think that you've learned is the biggest reason, is your biggest thing that you can do for success at a show?
Do not be afraid to ask questions. Like, I have to throw a shout-out to Christy Knitter's Brat. She, our very first Stitches South, I think my mom called her three times a week, every week, going to our very first Stitches South, because we didn't know. I mean, we didn't know what the load in, load out policy was. We didn't know where we were going to be, when we could load in, when we could load out. Did we have to take all of our product with us at the end of the day? All those kinds of things that you just, little questions that you don't know the answer to. And that's one thing I have to say that you guys do the best with. If I have a question, I know I can pick up the phone and call Christy or send Christy an email, and I'll have an answer within a couple of hours without exception. And that just kind of helped my mom and myself kind of feel a little bit more at ease, because we knew if we had a problem that we could call and we could get an answer to the question. Asking questions is probably what I would say is the most important thing when you're going to do a show. Especially if you're going to do a big show, like I think of Stitches as a big show, because there's a lot there. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of people who do all of the shows, you know, which I never thought I would be one of those people, and, you know, been blessed that I can, and I love it. But asking questions is really, I feel like, one of the biggest things, because, you know, you're going to hit roadblocks. You're going to hit speed bumps, and you're going to go, oh, my gosh, what do I do? And you need to know that you can call somebody. And, like, we called Christy, but, like, I have a friend who was unsure of whether or not to do Stitches Midwest. And I kept telling her, oh, you should do it. It's a great show. You should do it. It's a great show. And she lives, like, 20 minutes from Schaumburg, so she can stay in her own bed. I'm like, come on, you should do it. You should do it. And so she decided she's going to do Midwest. I'm real excited for her. I think she'll do really well. And she sends me probably two or three questions a week. What about this? How does this work? And I'm more than willing to answer those questions. You know, here's my experience. Here's what I do. This is typically my kind of, you know, routine, and, you know, this is what I'm aware of, and this is something to think about. And those are the things that, I mean, it's, you know, just having somebody there who's done it before, or knowing somebody who is willing to say, oh, don't do that. That's, you're going to kill yourself. Don't do that. Or yes, definitely, you know, you want to go this route, is really helpful. And then, like, you know, I'll come up with questions that, you know, I'll still have questions. Wait, how does this work? Or wait, what do I do with this? Do I need that? Do I have to apply for a tax ID or whatever? And, you know, Christy always has those answers, and it's really nice to be able to know that, you know, I can send her an email really quickly when I'm at school, and, you know, I'll have that email, I'll have an answer by the time I get home, which is really nice. And I think that asking questions and not being afraid to ask those questions is really the key, because if we hadn't asked as many questions as we had, I don't think we'd have been as prepared as we were for our very first show. You know, every show you learn something new that, you know, if you ever stop learning, yeah, you should probably quit. You know, oh, this worked really well. We could change this way, or set that up that way, or, you know, this made it faster. And but asking those questions, you know, when should I load in? How long does it typically take to get through the, you know, pack out line and things like that, just so you can kind of budget your time, because at the end of your show, you're tired. You know, you want to get back to that hotel room and go to sleep. Knowing things like that, you know, like I remember a couple of our first shows, we always waited for Viper to load us out. And I remember one time I looked over at Miss Babs and she was completely gone. And I was like, wait a second, she had three booths. How did she do that? What? Like, I was really upset. And she came back in to get, like, a last piece of girdle. I'm like, how'd you do that? She goes, oh, we just loaded ourselves out. I was like, oh, like, that never occurred to me. Like, I have a dolly. Why can't I load myself out? Duh. You know, like, if I'm in a hurry to get back for school, I can pack my trailer. You know, it's things like that. And just, I think, the asking questions and just having that support, knowing that I can call Christy, or, you know, I can call Miss Babs, I can call Deanna, I can call, you know, any number of people who do Stitches and ask a question, and they're all really willing to help you out. I've, you know, and that's something else, is it's a really, you know, it's a bad pun, but it's a really tight-knit community. Everybody's, you know, very close friends, and everybody knows everybody, and nobody's mean about seeing you succeed. Everybody's like, oh, you had a good show, that's awesome. You know, they're really, it's kind of like having your own cheerleading section. Everybody wants to help you out. Everybody wants to see you succeed. Everybody's willing to offer you help if you need it. I mean, I remember my Midwest of last year was right after my mom passed away, and I came in and I was, you know, trying to get Viper and find the Viper people to load into my booth and everything. And my dad and my husband were with me and they were waiting with the trailer and they had no idea what the procedure was. So like I had to take care of all of it. And I saw Miss Babs. She goes, "You tell me what you need." I said, "I might need to borrow Jen for a little bit." And she goes, "I'll send her by." And sure enough, like about an hour and a half later, we're in the middle of setting up her booth. And Jen comes by and says, "Hey, Lindsay, how are you? Do you need help?" You know, and, you know, it's just one of those situations where everybody's there and everybody's willing to help if you're stressed out or whatever. Like my dad, when he was doing shows with me, he would go and get Starbucks for everybody before pack out. And because my dad loves an excuse to go to Starbucks. So he'd be like, "Okay, I'm taking Starbucks orders." He'd walk around and get everybody Starbucks orders and come back with all the Starbucks. It's just, it's like a family. I mean, everybody's there to see, nobody's like, "So-and-so did well this week." Like, nobody's upset. Everybody's like, "Wow, it's a really great show," you know? And the, you know, not being afraid to ask questions, being friendly with the people near you. You know, you never know who you're going to be next to. I mean, like, at Stitches South, I was right next to Yarn Top. Okay, that's fine. You know, it happens. Okay. And, you know, I wasn't upset. Fine. She's there. Okay. You know, there's plenty of knitters to go around. Everybody's got something different. And, you know, there were some people who were like, "What do you have for iPads?" I'm like, "I don't, but Yarn Pop does." Because I didn't, and she does, and I know that. I don't begrudge her that because I don't want to make it. She does a really good job. I don't want to touch that. So, you know, just being willing to ask questions. And like I always try to be like really friendly with whoever I share a wall with in the show, because, you know, if something gets knocked over, you know, a cord gets pushed over here, you know, I mean, you have to go with it. I mean, it's a pop-up show essentially, and you have to be willing to kind of say this is going to work and this isn't going to work, and, you know, just be friendly with people. I've made really great contacts and friends at Stitches just because I'm willing to say, "Hey, how are you? Can I help you with anything?" And, you know, and I've learned a lot by asking people questions, you know, not just Christy, but, you know, asking Miss Babs questions and asking Deanna Van Nuys questions and all that kind of stuff. I'm just, you know, everybody there has a story to tell and information to give and knowledge to gain from. And if you ask questions, most people are willing to share their knowledge with you, which is really, really nice.
I agree with that. And as we're talking about our mutual friends, this is something I wanted to get to as well. I think that one of the reasons that you get that kind of positive response back from other people is because you tend to push it out there. I don't think that comes just from a vacuum. I think you're the kind of very positive and generous person that inspires that in other people. And not to say that Miss Babs and all these other people aren't. I mean, it's just a good bunch of people. But you in particular have been very generous to a cause which is very near and dear to my heart, and we share a mutual friend. And, of course, I'm speaking of Pam Hashke of Halos of Hope. Can you talk a little bit about what you've done with Halos?
Well, last year was really first the year we did anything with Halos specifically. We've always supported them. We've given them, you know, just donated here or there. Here's something that you can do as a raffle or give away to say thanks for somebody who donates a bunch of hats. Things like that, just because I would love to be able to knit a hat to donate it to Halos, but 99% of my time is spent sewing. So I had to kind of find a way to support Halos without knitting. And so I remember at Stitches West in 2012, we donated several little, like, grab bags of drawstrings, and she gave those out to people who donated a bunch of hats. And people came by to thank us, and I'm like, "Why are you thanking me? You're the one donating to Halos. Like, thank you, you know, for those people who need that support and know that somebody really cares for their struggle." And but last year at East, we one of my fabric companies puts out a breast cancer awareness or breast cancer support fabric line every year. And it came out, it was really cute, and I saw it, and Pam and I had talked about possibly doing, you know, breast cancer awareness bags or, you know, and the proceeds would benefit Halos. And so I ordered the fabric, and it turned into, like, this huge thing with the fabric company. I had to yell at them several times. But I got the fabric in, and we made a bunch of drawstring bags for Pam and a couple buckets that she could raffle off. And it was really successful. I don't think people realized what it was or what it was going to right off. And we talked about it, and this year we're going to do it again. I still have some of that fabric left over, and the new line isn't as cute, so I'm going to stick with this fabric. And we're going to do another run of drawstring bags. And I'm thinking a lot of people last year were asking for, like, pattern keepers and buckets and things. So I think I'm probably going to do a little bit more, like, a few more products, not just the drawstrings this year with the halos. Because it is a really – I think it's a really important cause. And, you know, my grandmother – was a breast cancer survivor. One of my best friend's mother lost her battle to breast cancer, and my mother-in-law is currently battling cancer. So, like, it's really close to my heart, and I just think what she does is amazing. And it's really heartwarming to see how many people at Stitches, how many attendees show up to really support that cause. And I remember the first time when I met Pam, we were at Stitches Midwest in 2011, and we were across the aisle from her, and she was just the most personable, fun person that we got to talk to the whole weekend. And my mom and I were like, she is just the nicest person. I just love her. And I remember it was the first time we have a fabric with bras on it, and it's real popular. And it was the first show that we had taken that to, and everybody was just gaga over it. And Pam thought it was hilarious because, of course, you know, like, bras and women and knitting and breast cancer and, like, all that stuff. And she was like, oh, that's so cute. And, you know, I remember when the Knitting Guild or maybe the Crochet Guild, somebody brought over the hats at the end of the show, and it put her over, like, 300 hats. She was so excited, and, like, everybody was cheering, and it was really exciting. And just to see that she'd hit her goal or exceeded her goal. And then at Midwest last year, while Pam was, you know, flitting about London at the Olympics, whatever. We were right beside Halos, and the ladies that she got to work the booth were just delightful. And, you know, I'd go over there and, you know, check on them, see how they were doing, and, you know, check on the totals every now and then. And they would cheer whenever they got a big donation. And I remember somebody was in my booth going, and, like, she caught her off guard. She was like, what is that? I said, oh, it's Halos of Hope. They just got a large donation. She goes, how do you know they got a large donation? I said, they hoop and holler when they get a large donation. She's like, oh. I said, you should go over there. They've got some good raffles and stuff. And she did. But I think that anything that anybody can do to support that is just wonderful. And, you know, just Pam, and it's just so inspiring. And everything she does is just really just from the heart. And I think she's just a really genuine person. And, like, you know, I look forward to seeing her at every show and, you know, giving her a hug and all that kind of stuff. She's just, I love her to death. I can't say enough good things about Pam.
Well, you won't hear me stopping you saying nice things about Pam. Of course, you know, I'm a big fan. So we're going to start wrapping up here pretty soon, but I wanted to make sure that people knew your show schedule for the next couple of months. Where are you going and where are you going to be? Where can they find you out in the world?
Well, in July, on July 20th, we're going to be at Skerritt Bennett in Nashville at SSK. It's a retreat put on by the Knit Girls podcast. So it's the Super Summer Knit Along. So we'll be at SSK on July 20th. It's one day of vending. It's just that Saturday. But it's really good. It's really good. You can lose a lot of money there quickly. And then following that, in August, we're going to go to Midwest. And then after Midwest, that's August, then November will be at East again, and then Christmas, we don't do anything around Christmas because it's crazy, and then we'll be back at West again in February, and then, of course, South in April. And also in April, we're probably going to do DFW again down in Dallas, which is a fun show too if you're in that area.
And if one of our listeners can't get to a show, they can find you online.
Yes, we are erinlanebags.com, or you can find us on Etsy at erinlanebagsandmore.etsy.com. That's our Etsy shop.
So I end the show usually asking my guests one thing, and I'm going to have it be more specific in your case. You're somebody that made the leap to go into business for yourself. And it's a very scary thing. Do you have any advice for somebody out there that was considering going into business themselves?
First off, don't be afraid of success. You'll be surprised at how many people are willing to jump behind you and be like a cheering squad. And all your friends and family, it's, you know, everybody wants to see you succeed. Don't be afraid of success. But more than that, the advice that I was given the most, that has been the most useful to me, was do not feel the obligation to expand past what you can do. I've been told, I can't count how many times, oh, you should do this, or you should do that, or you should go on Shark Tank, or you should do this. And I know if I do that, I'll expand past what I can do. So, you know, maybe my growth is slower. Maybe it takes me a little longer to be huge. But if I grow at the pace that I can handle, then I know that I'm never going to have customers who are disappointed, which means I'm never going to have customers who are angry, which means I'm always going to have customers for life.
Well, that's a great answer. I'd like to thank you again for joining me this morning, Lindsay. And I hope I can persuade you to come back to the show in the future.
Absolutely. I would love to.
Okay. So that was Lindsay Martin from Erin Lane Bags. Make sure you keep up with her by visiting her website, erinlanebags.com, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Next week, my guest will be my dear friend and dye pot goddess, Jeannie Randolph, owner of Fiesta Yarns. Jeannie has been the owner of Fiesta Yarns for over 12 years and is a driving force behind the amazing colors that her company produces. If you ever picked up a skein of Lavo M, you'll know what I mean. She's also one of the most accomplished marketing minds that you could ever meet. I hope you'll tune in next week when I talk to one of the best people I have ever met. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on our Ravelry group, Fiber Hooligans. Our moderator, Tammy Burke, does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide follow-up to any questions, and I try to get up there and make sure that I post links to anything that we might have talked about. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, or just because I'm feeling feisty, I may even read your email or message on the podcast. That's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with me. I'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.